check this out. This is Fresh Get Out the China Man with the 2 Live Crew.
Yo, yo, what's up, y'all? It's me, DMC.
What's up, y'all? This is the Blunt Master P.
Yo, check us out. Chuck the Public Enemy.
Yo, what's up? This is DJ Yella from the world's most dangerous group.
What's up? This is DLC.
This is your boy, C-Murder.
This is Jerry Heller, motherfucker.
This is your boy, DJ Paul KOL 365.
Young Busy Ball.
Vice One.
Yo, this is DJ Ready Brand.
What up, what up, what up? This is the real Rick Ross. You listen to me on the Murder Master Music Show.
This is a show that shows no limits, broadcast nothing but the real. Interviews with legendary artists, still got love for the underground feel. Rappers with records, reveal the addition of rappers that are coming up, get them put on. We need to the platform to fight the mainstream. This is the show that you need to be on. Hit up UGS for life on the screen and follow with Wizards.com. For all of your needs, production and mixing and mastering, graphics and shadow design. Check out the archives and hundreds of shows, plenty of content for you to dig through. Everything free to download and stream. Oh yeah, we deserve the real.
Unstoppable, we
beat,
we fight our bitch, we represent. All them killers on the mic, and we show love to all your fans. Motherfucker,
hundreds of albums over the years, you know, worked on several classics, you know, gold and platinum releases, you know what I'm saying, you name it, this man's done it. I'm going to bring on our guest right now, Cotton Row Studios. Nico, how are you doing, sir?
Doing great, considering. How are you?
Man, I'm hanging in there, man. This is some of the craziest stuff we've ever seen as a collective, you know, as a human species. What has it been like for you and yours during this whole coronavirus pandemic?
Well, it's changing everything in the way we do things. You know, I mean, we live for creating music, and we do it in the studio, we do it live, and in all these senses, it has changed it, man. It's just we're reinventing how to do it. It's kind of, it has us relearning how to vibe, if you will. But, you know, it's not going to kill us. It's going to be all right. We're going to figure it out.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things that's getting a lot of people through this is music. We see a lot of artists, you know, getting online, doing different things, putting out new music, doing different things. How has music helped you during this time?
Well, music is healing. Music is the language that reaches you and explains things the way speech alone cannot. You know, I mean, it just touches us straight to the heart, man. And that's not ever going to change, except at the moment we are relearning how to, you know, reach out and, you know, just get it to the other side. I mean, it's one thing to have an audience in front of you, or even in the studio, to have the folks around you interacting and vibing. And, you know, it's another thing to have to stand, you know, socially distant. You know,
yeah.
I don't know. You know, we're relearning it. We're still human. We're still artists. We're still, you know, we still got a lot to say. We're just relearning how to go about it.
Yes, absolutely. Now, your music history, it goes back, you know, to the glory days of Memphis, you know, the Memphis hip-hop scene. You've worked with a lot of the greats, but let's go back even further. You came over here as a kid. You were only about, what, 19. You came from Greece. What was that like for you to touch down here in the States at such a young age?
It was a culture shock. You know, I had an idea of what America was supposed to do, to be, and everything I loved musically had come from here. And somehow I just decided I was going to get on a plane with a suitcase and a guitar and just make it to the other side of the Atlantic. But that's as far as I had planned, you know. So I got here, man, and, you know, the way I picked Memphis, it's really funny. You know, I had no clue. I had heard the word Memphis on some song titles and what have you. And I just figured it would be a cool place for music. I had no idea that, you know, Stax had been here, High Queen had been here, you know, Sun for that matter and all that. And I just put my finger on the globe, you know, and I went from Europe to America. And somehow it slid, and it went from Athens to Memphis, believe it or not. And so I just said, well, that's a good sign. That means it's going to be the same climate or something, which couldn't be further from the truth. But I did get on a plane, and I got here, and I just, like, went, like, what have I done? You know, where am I? You know, it was like night and day from what I was used to. But yeah, on the bright side, I met the most wonderful people right away. And to give you an example, the first month I was here, I was playing, you know, guitar with Ruby Wilson, this great blues singer, you know. And
wow.
You know, somehow I found my way. You know, I just know. I met all the people that I had hoped to meet and played with some of my heroes. And then, of course, you know, come mid to late 80s, I started meeting all this incredible hip-hop talent that ended up putting Memphis on the map all over again.
Oh, yeah. Now, when you started hearing, you know, the hip-hop emerge, what were your first thoughts on the genre of music?
Well, you know, it was brand new. My approach is to always look for the freshness and the innovation, and I heard that right away, of course. You know, if my introduction to it would have been mid-80s, I suppose, and, you know, it went through different phases before it, you know, settled on a Dirty South style, you know, pretty much what came out of Memphis, the whole gangster walk thing. But there was talent waiting, you know, to rise to the top all along. And there were the early days of rap in Memphis, before it was even, you know, a thing. And before you knew it, you had this little 16, 17-year-olds that were making fresh stuff up. And there was this little bitty house on Park from where most of these guys came, and I was lucky enough to meet them early on. There was this little place that had a production company called On the Strength Posse. You know about all that. And just about 80 to 90% of the people that became Memphis legends later came from that little place, you know, from Al Capone. Well, first of all, from Gangsta Pat, and then to Al Capone, 8-Ball, NJG, you name it, you know, Tila and Cody. And somehow I lucked out, and they came to me to mix a couple of things. And then, you know, one thing led to another. I said, well, let me put a little guitar on this. Let me do this on that. And we started with Gangsta Pat, who is really the granddad of them all here in Memphis. We put his record out, that Number One Suspect record. And that was the first serious national record deal out of Memphis. He signed with Joy Boy Records on Atlantic back in, that would have been late 80s, early 90s. And the rest is history. And everybody else followed his steps. He opened the door, and then came, of course, 8-Ball and Al Capone, Skinny Pimp, you know, and all that whole family came out of that one little place off of Park.
So Gangster Pat, pretty much, he kicked the door in then, huh?
I think so. You know, he's definitely an unsung hero in many ways because, I mean, he did well with that record, the number one suspect. But he was such an innovator, man. There were a lot of people hanging around and vibing together. You know, it was him, like I said, 8-Ball and JG were there. Al Capone was there, 17 years old. There was this little guy called Radical T. There was Tila, of course, and Cody. They were hanging out there, Skinny Pimp. There were some DJs, DJ Zerk, you know, was this guy Psycho. There were like a lot of people that made it to a degree or another, but pretty much paved the road for the people that came after them, including the big ones, 3-6 Mafia, of course, you know. They are a product of that environment and that boiling pot with a gumbo in it.
Yeah, 3-6 Mafia, you know, they end up winning an Oscar years down the line. Did you see that coming when you first saw them? None of us probably did, huh?
I knew that they were different and special right away when I first worked with them. They were selling about 75,000 copies out of their trunk in the tri-state area before they ever had a real record deal. In fact, they got their first record deal out of my studio. We signed it in my studio with Relativity Records. They had that World Domination Chapter 2 album, and I recorded and mixed all that. We did all that Tear the Club Up and all that stuff. And they came down from Relativity Records. This guy, Cliff Contrary, actually, who was the president of A&R, and we had a big party at my place, signed the deal, and the rest is history. They got their first gold record out of that one and then never looked back. You know, they just went on to platinum records. They went to there was an Oscar. Ironically, that Oscar was from the movie Hustle and Flow, and Al Capone and I had a song on that as well that won the Critics' Choice Award, the title song, Hustle and Flow. And so, I mean, we all did well out of that movie. And, you know, Frazier Boy was on that. There's just a lot of Memphis. I mean, it's a great, sweet little Cinderella story for everybody.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it sure is. Because that was the first time that Memphis really had the spotlight put on them. Because, you know, Memphis always seems to be slept on. I don't know why. So much talent in the city.
You know, classic stories, just like it used to be that you, as a R&B musician, you had to leave the city and go to a place like L.A. or New York before you were recognized. Same with Memphis, you know, we pretty much came up with the whole gangster walk thing, the whole Southern style of rap, and it started here, but sure enough, Atlanta got all the credit later on, didn't they? I mean, even people like Jazzy Faye went there. I mean, he's a Memphis son, you know, born and raised here, and he was in my studio as well with the group Funkaholics early on. I mean, these guys were all, like, four of them were sharing one apartment and, you know, sleeping on the floors, and I couldn't get them out of my studio. I couldn't, you know, get rid of them. They lived in the studio and created. And, you know, then Jazzy Faye went to Atlanta, and today he's more Hollywood than Memphis. But, you know, much respect is due to him for, you know, rising and letting the world know about his talent. The same happened with a lot of folks from here. Well, 3-6 too, right? I mean, they're not here anymore. But they keep coming back here because you can't get away from that which inspired you in the first place.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. What was it like being in the studio recording with 3-6 Mafia?
Oh, man, it was nonstop hard work and artistic satisfaction at the same time. Those guys would block book the place, I mean, for a month at a time. And, you know, they drove a hard bargain, by the way. I gave them the lowest rate I've ever given to anybody because it was a good thing. You know, there was something going on and everybody knew it. So anyway, we lived in that damn studio. We would get there in the afternoon and not get out until the next morning. It was wonderful because, you know, in real time you would witness, you know, creativity and greatness. They were very serious about their work. Once they got in there, I mean, that was it. We just kept working. We didn't even take, you know, dinner breaks or anything. We just like, we'd bring some food in and eat on the console while writing verses. And, you know, you have to understand that that was a big family. It wasn't just Paul and Juicy. It was everybody, you know. The members, of course, you know, Gangsta Boo, you know, Lord Infamous, you know, Crunchy, whatever, Coot. But they also had all these other, you know, side members, if you will, you know, from the Kamikaze Incorporated guys,
yeah.
MC Mack, and Scamman, you know, all that. And they were all, everybody was in the studio at all times. And then there were all these kind of like, you know, valets or hanger-ons, you know, but they were regular presence in my place. There was this little engineer who is now Gotti's guy, Little Pat, of course, you know, the legendary. there were other guys that were just hanging around, and some of them survived, some of them didn't, as is always the case. But there was a sense of a family that looked out for each other. You know, there were guests that would come and go. We had the Hot Boys come out from New Orleans at one point, and there was this big police raid at my place. You know, I mean, you couldn't see for the smoke. You know, there were like a good 30, 40 people in the studio.
Which
yeah, we had some interesting incidents from time to time. We had some arrests.
Did they tear up your studio or?
No, it wasn't like that. It was just that, you know, some people would be in the studio, some people would be hanging outside. Next thing you know, police would drive by and they decided they needed to raid the place, you know, just to do it. And next thing you know, they would drag Paul or Juicy downtown and we had to go bail them out and stuff like that, man. That was that was part of the deal.
Yeah. So you definitely, it was like a family-oriented relationship then. Like, I mean, you had their backs for real, it sounded like.
Absolutely did. You know, I never once felt uncomfortable or unsafe, or I never felt like I couldn't talk about something with the guys, you know, if there was something that I wanted to bring to their attention that could have been done differently or better. I felt, you know, free and encouraged to say that. They're really good guys. You know, they're really cool, creative guys, and they respect the same in others. They respect creativity, and they appreciate the hard work. Now, you know, that may not be reflected in the way the money split up, you know, but it was at least a family vibe otherwise.
Yeah, definitely. Lord Infamous, he is a real humble individual. We had him on the show about a year before he passed, And one of the things I really respected about him, we were talking about, you know, him doing drugs and stuff. He's like, I want my fans to know that even though I make music about it, I don't want you to do drugs. And I really respected that of him, because even though he was battling his demons, he still had enough in him to say, don't be like me. You know, don't do
this.
He
was a sweetheart. He was a sweetheart. And he was humble. He was really quiet in the studio until he got in front of the mic. And he was, in my estimation, he was probably the most interesting creatively from all of them, because early on he would experiment. I mean, he would just try to rap over a metal track, for that matter. You know, I mean, he was like really unafraid to try things, and that inspired the rest to, you know, to bring up their game. You know, I mean, it was a really cool thing. It was a stride in a funny way, you know, for all the you know, hardcore lyrics, there was this quest for excellence. Let's see how far we can take it. Let's see how creative we can be. Let's see if we can break new ground here.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. What was, you know, another one gone, Koopsta, what was he like?
Man, he was more of the same kind of humble. As much as he was flamboyant in front of a mic, he was a humble guy. He was easy to work with. I did an album. Actually, I produced a record on him, the K Project, at one point, you know, and had a chance to really get to know him well. He was just a sweetheart. He was... He had his problems like everybody else. You know, they come from an environment that sooner or later will manifest itself in some kind of way. But all around, this guy was sweet, sensitive, you know, not afraid to work, not afraid. He was a perfectionist. He would call me up in the middle of the night with a new idea, you know, and just talk my ear off and wouldn't rest until we got in the studio and tried it. You know, he was great. He was a great guy. That's another guy that, you know, of course, left us too early.
Yeah.
But, you know, man, it is part of the game.
Yeah, yep. That's one thing for certain for us all, you know, is we all die, unfortunately. But Coop, I always loved how he experimented with his vocals, the way he would deliver them and the cadence and the harmony. I mean, super fucking unique and a rare individual, you know?
He was incredible. He would hear stuff in his head harmonically and tonally. He used his voice like an instrument. He would just cop different tones and different pitches, and he knew exactly how it was going to translate before we ever recorded it, you know? He would do like his ad-libs a different way, and they would sound like background vocals in a way.
Yeah. Yeah, just very, very different compared to so many other people. I'll tell you what, we're going to go to a track here for a break, but before I do, I definitely want to ask this. Did you ever get a chance to work with B.B. King at all? And if so, what was that experience like?
Oh, my God. Yeah, you just pushed the right button right there. I worked with B.B. on four or five occasions. It's probably one of the highlights of my career and my life, you know, just to be next to him, sometimes coaching him on how to play a part and stuff. Believe it or not, I'm not saying that in a braggy way, but it's just this guy, talk about a guy that was the best of the best, yet he was humble as hell and a gentleman. I worked with him on several occasions. I recorded him for an Albert Collins album that we were making. He came to the studio, and he and Albert played and traded riffs and then sat on the couch and traded stories for another 3 hours. I recorded him. I produced a jingle for Sam's Town, and they paid BB big bucks to be on it and make a video of it. So he and I recorded the jingle, and then we went down to Sam's Town in Tunica and spent the day making the video, and, you know, hung together, had breakfast, lunch, dinner together. He told me stories that are actually in the book that he put out later, but I already knew them from him. I recorded him live two times at B.B. King's Club with a full band. I mean, the guy was the gentleman of gentlemen, and for all the hard times he had witnessed coming up and for all the abuse he took on the road in nightclubs before he was huge, he was just the kindest person I have met. He treated me like a son, and he just inspired respect. It's no wonder that he is the giant that he is.
Yeah, yeah. We were blessed to have him for many, many years. Same with Fats Domino, New Orleans. Both of those two guys I thought were just icons. You know, one a master of the guitar, the other a piano. Just musical legends. You were blessed to be able to be around so many different types of musicians, you know, and they were blessed to be around you because all that experience and all those different genres, you know, that's got to be a lot, you know, to absorb, man. What was it like, you know what I'm saying, doing that, you know what I'm saying, with guys like B.B. King and then 3-6 Mafia, I mean, Oscar winners, platinum plaques. When you reflect back on all that, what are some of your thoughts?
I'm still pinching myself, you know, and not only in blues and hip-hop, it happened in R&B, you know, it happened in gospel, for God's sake. I mean, I had the good luck to work with Edwin Hawkins, the greatest gospel personality, you know, Oh Happy Day writer. You know, I made about 6-7 albums with him, sitting right next to him at the console for, you know, a week at a time. And, you know, man, all these guys, the great ones are always humble and, you know, willing to pass on the wisdom and, you know, to show you how it's done. I mean, I can't believe that a little kid from Athens, Greece, you know, came to Memphis and, you know, I mean, it's in the water over here, I guess, you know, and by the time I got to work with these guys, I was a true Memphian myself, you know. I felt like I had been born here, you know. It was like this place has a way of making you its own.
Yeah.
There was a time that I was in L.A. recording with Edwin Hawkins, and Santana was in the room next to us recording that Supernatural record, and you know, he came in during our break looking for Edwin Hawkins, you know, because he had been dying to meet him. And, of course, Edwin had gone to lunch. But that's the kind of vibe. These guys are not famous stars when you're working. They are somebody that's there to get this thing done, you know, and work with you and not intimidate you.
Yeah. Yeah, oh yeah, definitely. Well, I'll tell you what, Nico, we're going to go to a song real quick, then I'm going to bring on Sin from France. I know he's got some questions for you. We're going to go with this Koopsta track, Ghetto Remix. Can you tell us about this one?
Which one is it?
It's a Ghetto Remix by Koopsta.
Let's check it out.
Here it is. We'll be, yeah, you've probably done so many. We'll be right back with Nico. Don't go nowhere.
With the fear, yeah, it all starts. started from scratch. Mixing board the gangster rap and there's a pistol back in physics. Psychopathic kids and nasty skills you oughta know. I didn't mean to cut a throat. Fucking childhood tribulations, but you living in the mud. Not to stray, where the trees don't have a breeze, and the dog have plenty of food. Where disease is constant killing, or a sex is always given. Where the doctors on the previous, no time for the usage. CDC should make an end, it's been going on since the pit. Where police is making gears, and our bitches getting arrears. Damn food and out to go, murder cases in the car. Show them love, never know, he was hung by a rope. See my mom's out with sins, rotten seeds, give me spin. Son, go to Nixon, don't see if we can borrow some bread. Shit, this is how to do it, but a word was nothing to it. See, I had to work them through it, over snap and look the face. What a fool never lived. EBT, I was a kid. Jimmy Jones was a glass, and our sisters always there. Damn, she gon' knock us down. Some little nigga finna get popped. I'm gon' have to put some rounds. Man, your family's dead. I'm sick.
Oh my God, you're bringing up, bring back memories, man. Oh my goodness.
Oh yes.
That was, I want to say this was from the K Project, but it was also on a compilation that you put out called Underground.
Exactly.
Are you there?
It was.
Hello? I'm not hearing you guys.
Yeah, you there?
Hello? I'm here now.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Can you hear me? Yeah.
Yeah, Sin, are you there? I should have Sin on the line, too.
Hey, guys.
Yep, we're here. Sin, are you there, brother?
Okay.
No, Sin's call dropped. But, yeah, what's it like, you know what I'm saying, when you hear stuff like that that kind of jog your memory on that track? What can you tell me about that track with Koopsta?
Oh, my God. This was I want to say it was on the K Project, but also re-released on a compilation, like maybe Underground Music, something. I'm trying to remember. Is that Stephanie Bolton singing those ad libs? I think that's what I would have used at the time. I hear a little guitar that I play too on it. I recognize my little riff. My God, man, I haven't heard that track in, 20 years? I have those masters at my place. I may have to pull them out and go over them.
In fact, for the you, but also End of the Line, it was Guitar House Crazy too by you.
Can you tell us
about this one too? It was dope.
That was a treat to hear that thing. That's a blast from the past.
Yeah. Also, you mixed the whole Kamikaze INC Kami Isaac in 2001. The whole album was mixed by you. Can you tell us about MC Mark and Scanman, about how it was to work with them in studio?
D-Lax and Flow 1-1, is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, it was the album Kamikaze INC Incorporated.
Kamikaze Incorporated.
Yes, sir. You mixed the world.
Yeah, those guys are great. MC Mac and Scanman.
Yes, sir.
In fact, I still work with those guys. I speak to Scan, once a month anyway. I mean, MC Mac has been coming to the studio recently to cut new stuff. Those guys are still alive and well. They are really true heroes and survivors. They were always in the 3-6 sessions. They were always around. And back then, they would hang in the studio and Paul and Juicy would say, well, okay, well, let's write a verse. We're going to drop in a verse by you on this song, you know, and we'll make it up on the spot, man, and go to the mic and spit it like their life depended on it. And you know, they still have that. They have that spirit. They are, you know, here they are in their, who knows, they're probably in their 40s now. But, I mean, they sound every bit as fresh today as they did back then. We did several projects with them. We did Kamikaze Incorporated. We did Kamikaze. We did
yes, sir. Kamikaze Time's Up, yes. Yeah, you mentioned Kamikaze Time's Up Geras also, yes. Yeah.
Right.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah, they, you know, man, we did so many records back then. you know, those guys were big part of that family, you know, as were a lot of other people that were hanging as guests. But, I mean, they would contribute a verse here and a verse there. And then, of course, the individual members of 3-6 would branch out. We did a Gangsta Boo album. I mixed
I'm Craig Eman,
duet.
Yes.
She did
the
a
first
duet
album
with,
of Gangsta Boo,
with, yes, yeah, and she did a thing with Crazy Bone, and I mixed that one. Then let me see.
Of Project Punch, yes, featuring Crazy Bone, Abza, you mixed it
right,
in song
right.
too, yes. Yeah.
Right, and then of course Project Path, you know,
yeah,
came out on record. We did that Getty Green record.
Getty Green, yeah.
Then, believe it or not, we had The Roots come down to my studio, and they recorded a duet with Project Pat that has not come out. The reason it didn't come out is because he violated probation, and he went to jail, and they decided to keep it off their album. But I still have that master. I'm sure Pat's going to come by to looking for it one of these days.
Oh, yes. It must be.
We did all kinds of stuff. I also work with this great hip-hop producer from Memphis, Carlos Brody, who is a major, major player. And he and I did a remix on a Raekwon song for the movie mm-hmm. Black and White. Let me see what else. We said Project Taz, we said Gangsta Boo. Of course, I was going to say there were out of the Memphis crowd, the Memphis original family, a lot of credit must go to Al Capone, you know, who there in the early days, I mean, with 8-Ball, and
going out,
went
yes.
on. Yeah, to create his own legacy, you know. I mean, yeah, we mixed that Whoop That Trick track together. We did, of course, the Hustle and Flow track, but he's had a lot of stuff. Yes. Oh boy, you know all that stuff. He's a great guy. He's very smart. He adapts to the times quickly, and he's a survivor. You know, Skinny Pimp, of course. You know, made a few albums with him. you got to remember all the
You
guys
need you need Angel Dust, yes, of Indo G. Yes.
Yeah, we need the one.
How it was to record with Indo G?
Yeah, right.
How it was to record with Indo?
Indo G, yeah, he's another great creative guy. He's somebody that would do a million vocal parts on a song, but he was so good about stacking them, yeah, it never clashed. He was just really like a master at that. Let's not forget people like M-Child, you know.
M-Child
like
Gone Mad, yes. You did Gone Mad, you did MC Mac Test on the Mac side.
Well,
also, you did Ducks on the South Side, too.
Yeah, you know it better.
Case
than
Downs.
You.
Yeah, I reviewed those. I reviewed those in the Murder Dog.
Yes.
Both of those albums.
Yeah. And thinking for Murder Dog, Murder Dog come in 98 for a promo of Ted Club of Turks album you did. You mixed it. It's a whole album of Ted Club of Turks. And Murder Dog was there. How it was to energy all that when Murder Dog was there for. So Kazi was there, Project Pat was there, MC Mac and Scanman, Lord FMOS. How it was this day with Murder Dog?
I'm sorry, you guys are cutting in and out. What was that?
Oh, I said Scott Press talked a little about Murder Dog because he was into Murder Dog at this time. And Murder Dog magazine came into Counter War Studio in 98 when Three Six Mafia worked for Teda Club of Turks album, and you did the mix of it.
Yep. You know, there were a lot of small acts you never hear about that came through the studio around the same time, but they're worth mentioning. Mm-hmm. You know, there were little people. There was Freak Master. There was D-Lax. Black Kennedys, you know. There was Cavius and Killer Mike. There was MVP.
Cavius.
There was, Blackout and Little Terror. And even this guy, this country rapper, Haystack, you know, he came by and did a thing with
Haystack one time.
We had a good old time. Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't trade those years for nothing, man. We had a great time. And, you know, God bless them where they all are at the moment. You know, everybody did well and is a survivor. I'm real proud to have worked with them.
Yeah. You did also Prophet Pussy, Body Parts. Too.
Yes. All right. Well, shoot, you know all that. Body Parts, yes.
And of course, you did the Gangster Part, First Respect, of course.
Right,
and,
right.
You did Wallow, big stuff, yes. And it was dope era, yeah. For the Coopstar album, K Project, I remember Judy Lynn. It was a very good song. It was sad at the same time because it was for his mother. You did the guitars on it. Can you tell us about this one, Judy Lynn? It was about his mother, of Coop.
Which one in particular?
Judy Lynn or Judy Lynn. It was a song about in memory of his mother, of Coopstar, who was dead, in fact. You did the guitars on it.
Man, you're catching me trying to remember. I remember that big part of that album was a producer that today is super successful and a great, great human being. This guy, Elvis Williams, who goes by Black Elvis today. Elvis was an up-and-coming beat guy. I doubt he was like 19 years old at the time. And he was super talented. And, you know, we did that a lot of beats together on that record, including Sandman little thing, which was like really a fresh track. But, you know, Black Elvis, to make a long story short, went on to work with Beyonce, Jamie Foxx, Ciara, you name it. I mean, he's like, he's huge right now in Atlanta and nationally, really. But he and I keep the relationship close. I mean, he comes and visits, and, you know, we are just one day has not passed.
Yeah. The most part of your work, in fact, it was a lot of, you mixed the album, and after it was mastered by Larry Nix. I know the studio, Adam Studio, and it was Lull Parts for Hypnotize Man Studio. And but the whole work of mixing, it was you. How is the difference with the mix and the mastering? Can you tell us about this?
Okay, great question. You know, mixing, of course, is the final setting of levels and writing of volumes and what have you, patching gear after you've recorded it, to make it, to give it like a, kick it up a notch, so to speak, make it competitive and make it sound like the hit records are competing with it. But once you do that, there's an extra step, mastering. And mastering takes all the tracks that you have mixed, and as much as you consider them final, there's one more step before they can be called final. That is mastering. Mastering processes, you know, it's really fine print. It makes sure that the levels are competitive for radio purposes, that it'll hold up against all the great big records that you hear out there. When your song comes on, it's not going to sound muffled and lower volume. And there are some people that are no pun intended, masters at mastering. Larry Nix is a legendary Memphis mastering engineer. He's retired by now, and his son, Kevin Nix, is wearing his shoes now, and he's doing just as well. Larry mastered most of the 3-6 records, too, from what I remember.
Yes, sir.
You know, he's just great. I mean, he started in the Stax days, and he had a mastering lab in Arden Studios. And, you know, he knew what he was doing. He would take something that was good and make it great, you know, and it involves EQ and compression, you know, not to get into a bunch of technical terms here, but it would take your song and bump it up, in essence.
Yeah. In the fact, when you do music and you produce, we can feel the gamble from the down south, the deep blue south. In fact, like I think about Mike Dean, or I think about Blake Franklin or Tamalfis too. You have your touch of down south music. Can you tell us about this feel of blue south?
One more time on that, because it keeps cutting out. The question, because I can hardly hear you. My phone
I said the whole part of down south music, it's about blues and guitars. So I thought about Blake Franklin in Memphis, who did it, Mike Dean in Houston, and you did it too. How was a part of blues south in your soul, in your music? Can you tell us about this, about the feel of the down south music, the blue south? But
well, you know, there's something in the water in this area that makes it unique and one of a kind. Whereas you go to a place like New York or Los Angeles and it's homogenized and, you know, high level industry, down here, everybody does things a different way, very deliberately, very originally. We're mavericks, you know, and we're not afraid to mix different elements together. We like a little, you know, rock in our blues. We like a little jazz in our gospel. We like a little funk in our hip-hop, you know. But all these folks coexist. It's a small place, but it's filled with talent that is like, you know, off the chart, and the result can't help but be a different kind of, you know, brand, a different kind of animal, if you will, that, you know, echoes all these influences. We're dirty, we're not slick, but, you know, we have balls in the music. You can't deny that. So, you know, I mean, you know, 3-6 would get you know, some blues tracks and sample them and put them in their stuff. You know, I mean, it's just it's the way we are down here. We're proud of it. I mean,
yeah, exactly.
You know, it still goes on, and you know, it's not just with blues and R&B and rap. You know, you see it in so all of a sudden you'll take a little, you know, rockabilly riff and sample it and rap over it. You know, I mean, it just happens every day, and we are not even thinking anything of it. We just think that's the way it's supposed to be.
Yeah. But Ben B said one time, in New York, it's more intellectual. In the down south, we connected to the earth. It's like deep down towns, you know?
Yeah. And in the words of a Memphis song, New York gives you attitude, but Memphis gives you soul.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Did Spanish Fly back in the day work out with you? At the time, he was in 1986, 87 in a Club Expo, a club no name. I was 10 years old in Memphis. But did you work out with him back in the day? With Spanish Fly? Work out with Spanish Fly back in the day? DJ Spanish Fly?
Yeah, working with Spanish what?
Oh, Spanish Fly of DJ Club Expo, Club No Name.
Yeah. I did not work with him. No, I did not work with DJ Spanish Fly.
Okay.
I work with Slice T a lot. DJ Sly T, who he's another unsung hero. I mean, he started, he was 17 years old in my studio with MC Rod, who became Mr. Rod later. And those guys were just on the cutting edge, man. There was also a guy, SMK. He was a great, great DJ and beat guy. You know, there's been many, many of them, like DJ Zerk. There was, of course, Just Born. You know, there's just a lot of these guys that they blur the boundary between DJ and producer. You know, they just put stuff together. They have a first-hand feel for what the dance floor likes, and they take it to another level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. You work out also with Lil Jon and If I Was. How it was to work in with him, Lil Jon?
Lil Jon and the East Side Boys. That was the Kings of Crunk album. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah.
I think that's the one you. Yeah. Talk about some great guys. See, to me, the more well known they are, the easier they are to work in the studio. They're straight up professional. They come in there. They don't fuck around. You know, they're there to get the record done. The gentlemen to work with. I still have a piece of paper where Lil Jon had written his phone number and his email address for me. I never used it, but I'm saying, you know, they're just such pleasure to work with. You know, it makes it all worth it. You know, you're exhausted at the end of the session, but you know you've done something great.
Yeah. And you work also with Spice One. How it was to work with him, for what album it was by the day?
Which one?
Spice One.
Spice
you
One.
Working with him. Yes, sir.
What album was that? Now, remind me, because I don't have them all in front of me. I think. Do you remember the name of the record? I'm trying to remember that. The particular
record.
I'm drawing a blank.
Yeah. Well, I'll find out. No matter, you're working with Juvenile too, Abel MJG, PDD also. You're working with him.
Yeah, PDD, yeah. Now, PDD, here's another great Memphis story that unfortunately didn't see the light of day. There was a group from Memphis called G-Style, and G-Style was like three killer, very, very talented rappers and also great dancers. They actually started the Gangsta Walk dance. I mean, there's a video that documents that.
Yeah.
In fact, I'm in that video of all things. You can look it up. It's called G-Style. It's still on YouTube. But anyway, those guys got a deal with Puffy. PDD was Puffy at the time, right? And he signed them. And he flew us all to Los Angeles to make an album. And we went to the record plant. We already had the tracks from Memphis, and we kept overdubbing. And Puffy was there, you know, trying to mix them with us. And, man, you know, talk about a hardcore pro. I mean, we would, like, work on a mix for 2 days. He would come in and would say, y'all are going to mix this, right? We thought it was finished, you know. But... You know, I mean, I have never had a problem with somebody that wants to make something better. I don't care if it's just one little detail that's going to take 3 days to improve. I'm there, you know, and I respect that a lot. He's a perfectionist. And in fact, at the time, he was hanging with J-Lo and she was around. It was kind of like a distraction for us. And he's great. I worked with him. In fact, while we were there, he was making demos on different people. In fact, Jazzy Faye was hanging out. Back then, nobody knew who he was. He was going by Stalin. And he had beats that he was shopping. And he would take out, like back then we had DAT tapes. And he would take out a DAT and play a couple of beats for Puffy. And sooner or later, Puffy would say, okay, I like this one. How much do you want? You know, Puffy would buy the beats outright, which is kind of like an outrage in my opinion, you know, so that he didn't have to pay royalties later. But, you know, he bought quite a few beats from Phelan, And then he had me play guitar on all kinds of tracks that were demos. I have no idea what I played on. I had a couple of guitars with me. And he would say, you like to talk about it, ain't you? Yeah, come on in and play on this, you know. We played on some Charles Thomas stuff, some weird stuff that I don't even know if it came out. But the vibe was very, very professional. He knew what he wanted. In fact, another engineer from Memphis was around at the time, this guy Michael Patterson, who became Puff's main remix guy later, good friend of mine, Michael mm-hmm. Patterson, he's in Los Angeles now.
Okay, right.
He remixed that remake of Every Breath You Take that they did. He remixed Biggie, he remixed Tupac, and then he moved mm-hmm. on to Los Angeles where he is now. But he was Puffy's guy, and he said the same thing about P. Diddy. He said they would have a video, and the audio would be off by not even a frame, and nobody would worry about it. And Puffy would walk in and says, "This is off by a frame." he's really sharp.
Yeah, you told about gangster work of J Star. It was a crazy anthem back in the day '93 with Evans video clip. You guys, the blue jeans, typical of Memphis back in the day. How they walk around in the clubs in cycle, crazy shit. you work also for Crazy Bone to Tamatality. Also, this album too.
Which one? Crazy
Bone, yes. Yeah.
All I did was mix that. I wasn't around mm-hmm. him. I just mixed it.
Okay. Yeah. And also back in the day, you working with the Barkays. Barkays, Memphis legends. How it was to work with them and Al Green too. You working with the legends like Ike Turner, Al Green, Barkays. Can you tell us about them?
The Barkays, I mean, are Memphis defined. You know, they are the legends around here. James Alexander is a good friend of mine, and so is Larry Dotson, the lead singer. Those guys, I mean, when I first got to Memphis, we actually shared the same attorney, Jim Zumwalt, who was negotiating all the record deals at the time with Polygram Records. And we became friends like that, and then we ended up collaborating. I think I mixed a couple of things with them, including an album that they did with other funk acts called United with Funk. The Barkays, at the time that I first met them, were produced by this great Memphis producer, Alan Jones. Alan Jones was an old Stax bass player that became producer, and he was really good, except would make records by listening to the radio and, you know, listening to the groove and say, okay, well, let's make a record like that. So in 5 minutes, they would have their own version. And so it's no wonder that they had all these hits in the 80s, Freak Show, all that stuff, you know, Sex-O-Matic, all that. They had their finger on the pulse of the groove at the time. And then later on, of course, you know, times changed. As you probably know, Jazzy Faye, Phelan Alexander, is James Alexander's son.
Of course, yeah.
So he didn't fall too far from the tree. But, you know, James is like, you know, a Memphis hero.
He's a legend.
Godfather.
Lex Lee Steve. Yeah.
Yes.
Like the other studio, like House of Blues and all that.
Yeah. Yes. In fact, I used to the House of Blues as well and work with them. The Barkays used to, I don't know, it's a little known fact, but the Barkays were trying to buy what became House of Blues later, the studio on Rainer Street. They had it for a while. Mm-hmm. And then Gary Belts, of the Peabody family, the Beltses, took over and turned it into, I think they called it Kiva at first, then he called it House of Blues. But James was a regular there. And, you know, I mean, he's a regular in every studio in Memphis, from Arden to my place to you name it. I mean, he's welcome everywhere because he's such an ambassador.
Yeah. How it was to work with Al Green, to legendary Al Green?
Al Green, again, one more time, I'll say it. All the great ones are the easiest to work with. Al Green came to my studio first time in the 80s, mid-80s, and recorded, I'm trying to think of the album that they did, but he had, what was it, this producer, Antume, and some two New York guys were producing, and he came and recorded a few sides of my place. Then later, in the 90s, I produced a live record called Soul Comes Home, which was a Stax reunion recorded live at the Orpheum over two nights. It had all the soul survivors from the Barcase to Booker T and the MGs to, you know, Mavis Staples to Isaac Hayes. And a guest was Al Green. He came out and did a couple songs live and just totally stole the show, as he always does. And then we took the record to my studio and, you know, overdubbed on it and doctored it up. I also have a personal experience with Al because on the year 2000, he was re-equipping his studio, and he decided he wanted to buy my recording console and my multi-track tape machine. So I sold him that. He installed it, and then a year later, I heard from him. He said, "Nico, you need to come over here. That stuff ain't working right." So I went over there, and they had passed it all wrong. So in 5 minutes, I repassed it. I said, "Al, try it now." But anyway, he's a gentleman. He's incredibly talented. He's a legend, a living legend, and again, a pleasure to work with. You know, there's nothing difficult about that. He comes in, he kills this stuff in one take most of the time. But he's a hard worker, too. He's not like, he's not going to tell you, "I'm not doing this again." He'll do whatever it takes.
Yeah. And you work also with Ike Turner, famous Ike Turner, also John Lee Hooker, too.
Yes. I just played live with him. We played a couple of gigs, including a show at the Cannon Center for, it was called the Heroes Award. So we rehearsed for a day, and then we played the next day and hung out with him quite a bit. I had a couple of good pictures out of that one. And there's a recording of that, too, somewhere with video that goes with it. He was great. We played his classic hits. You know, we played, you know, things like Proud Mary, and he played Rocket 88. In fact, we did one thing with him and Pine Top Perkins. And then Johnny Hooker, I recorded live in L.A. This was an event for B.B. King's Lifetime Achievement Award. And we went to L.A. in a theater. I want to say the Palace. It was across the street from Capitol Records on Vine. And it was a star-studded event, and it was, talk about high pressure to get it right. I mean, I was with King, John Lee Hooker, Bonnie Raitt, Buddy Guy, Dr. John. I mean, it goes on and on and on.
Yeah.
And it was one chance to get
Thomas
it.
Thomas,
so.
Too. Yeah. Rufus Thomas.
Yeah, Johnny Hooker. That was like one of the last recordings of his life. Well, he lived 2 or 3 years after that, I think, but I felt so lucky to have captured him on multi-track, you know. And again, all these guys are so great. They just walked in and did it.
Yeah.
You didn't have to talk much.
You haven't worked with ZZ Top.
Oh, yeah, wow. You know, with them, I did a remix with Billy Gibbons of a song called Give It Up. We did a dance remix in the early 90s. And then I got to know Billy, and he came to Memphis, and I was recording an artist by the name of Dexter Haygood. Dexter was a lead singer of a band called Xavion that had a record deal on, I want to say, on Elektra Records at the time, and he decided to go solo, and I cut a real funky version of Tush, the song Tush, the ZZ Top song, and Billy and Dusty Hill, the bass player, came to the studio and worked with me on that. And, you know, again, I got to know him and hang with him, go to dinner and talk to him. He actually gave me a couple of guitar pedals in the process. Those guys are just, you know, just generous and polite and, you know, nothing like you might imagine. They're not stuck up at all. They're just good people.
Yeah. You also perform with a group of jazz funk instrumental, Voodoo Village. Can you tell us about what you get into it? It's about Voodoo Village. Voodoo Village, your group.
Voodoo Village. Oh, that's
yeah.
My band.
Sorry. It's my French accent.
Yeah. No, believe me, talk about an accent, I have the worst.
Yeah, maybe you go in Europe. You came in France back in the day.
By the way, I have played in Paris a few times, and I have played.
Oh, really?
Oh,
cool.
Yeah. I played in the countryside too. So a couple of festivals with French Canadian artist. I've gone there a couple of times, and can't wait to go back. It's beautiful over there. Anyway, Voodoo Village. Voodoo Village is pretty much my brainchild. It consisted of some of the top musicians in Memphis, including the incredible drummer Steve Potts, who's legendary. I mean, he played with Greg Allman, played with Booker T and the MGs. He played with Wynonna Judd. He played with Cyndi Lauper right now. He's just one of those guys. Anyway, we made a jazz fusion record, two of them, and they were put out on this Memphis label called 40 West, distributed by Selector. He's an old Memphis family one-stop distributor. And we got on the charts.
Yes.
We charted with several songs, including a Memphis remake of the song Memphis Underground. Got a lot of airplay on that. And I think the first record was in 2003, something like that. Second record was in 2005. We toured with a band extensively. We were on the same stage as, you know, a lot of smooth jazz luminaries, if you will. And then we left it alone for a while. And just last year, we got back together with the same people, and we have a new band, and it's called the Diss Brothers. We released a record just recently and have gotten airplay on two songs so far. We got airplay on a good 150 stations, including Sirius XM's Watercolors. Trinity is playing a song of ours right now as we speak. It's called the Justice Brothers, and it's pretty much the members of Voodoo Village, lifelong brothers.
How it was to work with Selectorates? You work at a lot with them because of 3-6 and all that, and with Johnny Phillips. How it was to work with Selectorates?
With whom, I'm sorry?
With Johnny Phillips of Selectorates.
Johnny Phillips, oh my God. Talk about another Memphis hero and unsung hero. Johnny Phillips is one of the people that make Memphis what it is. He's an incredible mentor, an incredible quiet force, and he is, of course, of the Phillips family. He's a nephew of Sam Phillips, and his father, the brother of Sam Phillips, started this company. It's a distribution company, Selecto Hits, and it started as a warehouse to store the Sun Records product, but then you know, he continued on and made it a business for himself. And at one point, they were distributing almost, I want to say, close to 200 independent labels back when vinyl was selling. And in fact, Johnny is the reason that 3-6 Mafia was selling independently so well before they ever had a record deal, because they would make a deal with him, and you know, he was just like advertise their stuff through the trades, and they were selling like 70,000 to 100,000 copies per album before they ever were on a major label. It was incredible. So Johnny Phillips is old school, you know, record man. He knows what he's doing. He has incredible instincts. I guess it runs in the family and it's in the blood, but he understands the hit record, and I don't care if it's a country record. I don't care if it's like a Latin record, which he does a lot these days. He has a lot of Spanish label clients. I don't care if it's a rap record. Johnny put out about 100% of the independent hip-hop releases from Memphis from, I want to say, from the early 90s until today. You know, he has put everything out. Anything that's out there has been distributed by Johnny Phillips, including 3-6 Mafia, including Skinny Pimp, including, you know, you name it. He's the man. He knows how to work it. He knows how to, but he puts his money where his mouth is. He spends the right promotion expense at the right time with the right people. He knows the game. You know, I learn something from him every time I talk to him. He's incredible. And so is that whole family. The whole Phillips family is Memphis royalty.
Yeah. You also mixed the tell me about the third album, Ashes to Ashes. So you mixed the album
in
2006. Tell me about three. Tell me about the third. Ashes to Ashes.
Tommy Wright the Third. Now, how do you know about Tommy Wright the Third? That's fine print. that's very fine print. Oh man, Tommy's another well-kept secret. You know, he's as much as he talks trash on his records, he's such a serious professional when he comes in the studio. He's like a gentleman. He's quiet in the studio until he gets in front of the mic, and then it's a different story. Tommy Wright the Third, he's great. He still comes to my studio, and we mix some old tracks of his so he can perform live with them. He's a great guy, and he, for the most of it, he's been financing his own releases. I mean, he believes in himself. He's just a great guy.
Yeah. Yeah. Good. Can you tell us also about your solo album you did, Chunk of Space Funk?
Oh, man. Oh,
yes,
man. How do you know about that?
Released on Ice House Records.
Oh, my brother. You have done your homework.
Thanks.
Yeah, Chunk of Space Funk might be the record that I'm most proud of, even though it wasn't very well funded, you know, and, you know, and there wasn't that much money to promote it because the market is only this much, you know. But it is a labor of love. It's funk fusion guitar album. And it was made with not just a little, but a whole lot of help from my friends. It features people that I can't believe are even playing with me. You know, it features the great Victor Wooten, who is the world's, you know, best bass player. It features the great Eric Gales, who is one of the greatest guitar players who ever come out of the country. It features my love, Wendy Moulton, who is like, what, I mean, I can't think of a better singer out of Memphis in the last, you know, 50 years. It features just great, great, great artists. It features the great bass player Mono Neon, who is like an up-and-coming world-class talent. At the time.
Eric,
you know, Gales
also.
Yeah, Eric Gales. I mean,
Katie Blair. Like,
oh, my God. You know, and last but not least, it features this great Memphis vocalist Marcus Scott, currently the lead singer with Tower of Power.
Yes, sir.
So, yeah, I'm proud of it. Thank you so much for even knowing what that was.
Yes, great, great. It was a very good show to have you on the show. And have you a last message to say to those who starting to produce and or mix of produce for the young generation?
The message is, if you love it, it will love you back. Never be afraid to go after it. I'm a good example of somebody that was discouraged by my parents to follow music, but I knew from a very, very early age that that's what I wanted to do in life. And I went after it, and I can't imagine what else I could have done, you know, looking back at it. Believe in yourself, put everything you have in it, but, you know, you can't, it comes with great responsibility. You can't take it lightly. You have to give it every drop of your energy, every drop of your spirit, every drop of your love. Then you will be happy for life. And that has nothing to do with how much money you're going to make from it.
Yes, sir. Okay. Can you give us your social media for the people who want to contact you for mixing and all for Cotton Studios?
Yes. You can find me at nicoliras.com. You can find my studio at cottonrollrecording.com. And that's really about it. I'm also on Facebook, and the Justice Brothers are on Facebook, and I think on Instagram.
Okay, yes. Well, thanks for being on the show. It was a great honor to have you. You are a living legend in Memphis. So you'll be recognized. You must be recognized for all your work you did from back in the day since 1980. So it's crazy.
Thank you so very much. And my all of my amour for France.
Oh, yeah. Thanks. So we finished with a part of mixing you did. It was up there. Of a project partner in Crazy Bone. So can you tell us about this one? Yes, sir. Can you tell us about this one you mixed back in the day?
It
was about getting clean.
Thank you, guys.
Yes, sir. Have a good night.
You too. God bless.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
It works every time in 3-6 Mafia. We smoke and ride with hypnotized minds. Stir the line, nigga, roll it up, let's smoke one. Hey, did somebody say weed? Nigga, that's my thing, I love it, puff it every day. Shit, if it wasn't for the reefer fees and ease in my mind, nigga, I'd be wildin'. Talk about a nigga with an attitude. If I don't smoke, then I ain't smiling. I ain't eating, and I ain't sleeping, and I ain't fucking with no bras if I ain't weeded. Can't let it fuck my mind, I get with y'all later when I get high. Shh, listen, hit my brain as it's fire. I'm just like a junkie, nigga, this fix. Nigga, be relieved when I get my shit. Ain't nothing like that Kelly Green. Oh, that Miami weed. Prefer my trees, no sticks, no seeds. But you get good stress, I take that. Smoking, choking, keep me annoyed, but eyes wide open. And I'm scoping while I'm choking on this potent shit we rolling. Rolling up, down. Smoking that bud again. Telling me to quit the hoes in this green.
prayer, somebody's gonna get sprayed. Cough and choke on the weed, it's just what I do. I hit it again and then blow my niggas a gun too. We smoking all the time, is how we doing this. There's not a day I'm smoking that thing that I'm gonna miss. We getting high as a motherfucker as it seems. While chilling out on the strip called Orleans. Me and one of my road dogs that kicked the Cali tub. While we was at the low key, me and them bunk of the school were touching the bottom of the damn haters' feet. Man, we partying like some rock stars while we talking at my job. If y'all wanna know what we were getting high on, it was that goddamn funk. Sash that kind of flows and whoop the stars up to our nose and bump some ink to slow our road and pop some V's to help us.